and the mists are rising, and the rain is falling, and the wind is blowing cold across the moor. I hear the voice of my darling, the girl I love and lost a year ago. It's hard to believe, I know, but I hear her singing in the sign of the wind blowing in the treetops way above me. Yes, I'll always remember till the day I die. Johnny, remember me. Well, someday I guess I find myself another little girl to take the place of my true love. But as long as I live, I know I'll hear her singing in the sight of the wind blowing in the treetops way above me. Yes, I'll
welcome again to the Strange Brew podcast. You are listening, actually, to another extra special show. This time we've got a range of tracks related to arguably Britain's best ever producer, the legendary Joe Meek. And one of the reasons is I've got the great pleasure today to have to join me virtually in the studio, Craig Newton from the Joe Meek Society. Craig, thank you for taking the time to be with us today. First of all, obviously the first track is one of the quintessentially brilliant Joe Meek tracks, Johnny Remember Me by John Layton. But if you can just say a little bit about the Joe Meek Society and also about that wonderful lead track from Johnny Layton.
Yeah, thanks, Jason. Yeah, Johnny Remember Me, Joe Meek's first number one hit, chained John Layton to a massive star overnight. And I think it's just the essential Joe Meek sound. It's all in there. You've got the galloping rhythm, you've got the heavenly voices, you've got the Jeff Goddard composition, and Joe's wonderful balance and production in there. And it was quite interesting, really, because a few weeks ago they was playing the chart of 1961 on Radio 2, and everything was quite sort of middle of the road and average, and then Johnny Remember Me was at number one, and it's just such a completely different sound. It just makes me wonder how people felt about it at the time when it came out, you know, because it was just such a different sound.
And it is the work that you're doing in the Joe Meek Society to basically raise the prominence of Joe's work.
Absolutely. I mean, by no means is Joe a household name, but as the years go on, so much is done to promote Joe's name and try and point out to people his importance of 60s pop culture and recording production. I mean, UK's first truly independent producer recorded in his flat. Sometimes his sound did get heavily criticised. For example, when Johnny Remember Me came out, there's obviously a lot of echo and reverb on there. The critics were saying it sounds like John Layton singing in the bottom of an empty well. Joe would push everything into the red. He used lots of compression, lots of distortion, but he used it as a tool. When you record into tape and distort, and you get harmonic distortion, it just gives it this warmth. They always find it quite difficult to cut Joe's records because of the levels he would get.
It's a great record. And actually, our next track is really taking it back to the start. Humphrey Lyttelton and his band Bad Penny Blues. Was this something that Joe engineered, and that was this was kind of the first sort of significant chart hit that he had involvement with?
It was one of the first, yeah, going back to 1956 now. Officially only the engineer on the recording. In fact, funnily enough, George Martin took the producer's credit for it, but he did little else another sign it, you know, okay for release. But I mean, the general idea for jazz is to get that live, natural, untouched sound, if you like. And Joe just threw all that out of the window and decided to distort the piano, bump up the sound of the drum brushes, and just give it a more commercial sound. He's got a fantastic commercial ear for stuff that, you know, would make the charts, and this did actually, you know, enter the top 20. Humphrey Lyttelton wasn't too chuffed with the sound at the time, but he kind of changed his tune a little bit when it jumped into the charts.
Yeah, absolutely revolutionary in its day, going back well into the 50s. So let's hear Humphrey Lyttelton and his band, Bad Penny Blues. Okay, that was Humphrey Lyttelton and his band, really going back the furthest we've been on the Strange Brew podcast, Bad Penny Blues. Next, we have another revolutionary track related to Joe Meek, and that's The Blue Men and Magnetic Field. That's from the I Hear a New World LP, isn't it, Craig?
Yeah, that's correct, Jason. It's just about to be re-released again on vinyl as well. It's coming out the middle of May. And yes, very revolutionary, again, for the time. Basically, an LP device to test out your home stereo equipment. Joe had got a massive fascination with outer space and aliens and that sort of thing. And this was him just really bringing all these ideas and fantasies together in an album. The album wasn't released at the time, only a 4-track EP ever came out, and they believe only sold around about 100 copies, so it's very valuable today. And if you listen to this track, you'll notice that the sound effects on there were later used 2 years later in 1962 on Telstar. So just an idea of how advanced Joe was in his techniques. Joe was obsessed with sound. I mean, if you he has got a couple of monologues which are available on CD, and he talks about it on there. You know, he's always recorded sound effects. As a young child, he was taking radios apart and just messing about with anything to get sound effects and unusual sounds. And this is just him letting loose on what Joe does best, I guess.
Brilliant. Let's hear it. The Blue Men, Magnetic Field, from 1960. Blue Men and Magnetic Field. Next, we have a big ballad from Don Charles, Walk With Me, My Angel, released on Decca in 1962. Craig, what's the significance of this particular number?
Well, this one was a minor hit for Joe. It's one of his own compositions as well. I chose this one for a couple of reasons, really. Firstly, Don Charles, fantastic voice. I can't believe that he never had a more substantial hit. And secondly, because it's just, again, typical of Joe's sound. You know, it's a big ballad, big production, big sound, and just typical of what Joe could do.
Cool, let's hear it. Don Charles, Walk With Me, My Angel.
Walk with me, my angel, be my guiding hand. Walk with me each night and day, your love I'll understand. Walk with me, my angel, have faith in all. With me for can say we're wrong. The world knows I love only you.
Don Charles, Walk With Me, My Angel. Next, Craig, what more can we say about the Tornadoes and Telstar?
Well, I don't think we can go through any Joe Meek show without playing it. Well, we were talking about it before. Do we play that or do we play something else? It's just so iconic. And last year, the Joe Meek Society celebrated 50 years since Telstar was released. And we actually had Clem Kattin, the original drummer, come down and play for us as well. It just must have blew everything else out of the water at that time, I think. I mean, one of the funny stories about it, when it was actually sent to Decca for them to press it, the press engineers actually stopped and said, there's a fault on this. There's, you know, some noise at the beginning. You're going to have to send this back. Just shows how people didn't understand what Joe was doing at the time.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's hear the Tornadoes and Telstar.
Thank you.
The Tornadoes and Telstar. Next, we have the Packer Beats and the theme from The Traitors. That's a film that was released around that time, isn't it?
Yeah, it was a TV series, I believe. I've never seen it. It's actually used over the opening credits of the recent film that came out, Telstar, the Joe Meek story. And I think the tune was absolutely perfect for the start of the film. It just encaptures that whole mood, I think, really. But again, I mean, there was only a small band of Packer Beats, but the sound that Joe gets, it's just so well balanced. It's clean, and it's just got that fantastic suspense and atmosphere on it again, which I just don't think any producer in the 60s or since has ever managed to capture.
Yeah, I think it's important to remember how long ago, you know, it was, and the kind of material that was being produced in Britain at the time. The Beatles were still singing Love Me Do, you know, very, very sort of almost primitive in a way. And at the same time, Joe Meek was doing stuff that's, you know, was years ahead.
Absolutely. It's strange because the early 60s was Joe's golden period. And then late 64 onwards, people just totally seemed to go off his sound altogether, which is criminal, really, when he was so popular and had so much success. And then it just seemed to, you know, the hits just dried up. And his output also diminished quite a lot as well. You know, such a shame it went when he was constantly producing such fantastic records.
Yeah. So let's hear Joe Meek in his prime, the Packer Beats, theme from The Traitors. Was the Packer Beats and theme from The Traitors from 51 years ago. Next, a track that I only heard when you suggest it, Craig, but it's a classic. Houston, Wells and the Marksman, North Wind. Was that actually written by Joe as well?
It was written by Joe. It was criminally, it's actually put out on a B-side. It's funny, actually, quite a few occasions, Joe, I don't know if he didn't believe in his material at the time or was trying to make a certain impression, but there's lots of occasions where he put the wrong song on the A side. This one, again, it's just that galloping rhythm, fantastic Joe Meek song, just typical of Joe's productions. It's a big favourite amongst the Joe Meek fans, this one. It just fantastic production, and it's just one of those that just gives you, you know, the hair standing up on end, that sort of feel to it.
It certainly does. Houston Wells and the Maxmen, North Wind. Houston Wells and the Maxmen and North Wind. Next, we have Michael Cox and Say That Again from 1963. Craig, what's the significance of this wonderful track?
Again, it's another one of those that Joe mistakenly put on the B-side. Just again, a beautiful ballad. It's just got such that feeling, that atmosphere on there. Michael Cox did have a fairly sizable hit on Joe's own Triumph label, which he formed in 1960. It should have been a big number one. It was called Angela Jones. Unfortunately, the label couldn't cope with the amount of copies in demand and they couldn't press them in time, so it stalled. I think it was about number seven in the charts. But Joe pursued on with Michael Cox and he made several singles afterwards, and this is really one of his finest. But the typical Joe Meek girl singer on there, and yeah, just fantastic.
Cool, so let's hear Michael Cox and Say That Again.
Darling, say that again, the bit about you love me. Darling, say that again, the bit about your thinking of me. When you've said it 100 times, multiply by 10. I love you, I love you, I love you, I do. You can say that again. Darling, say that again, the bit about you miss me. Darling, say that again, the bit about the way you kiss me. You can say it till we go old, even after then. I love you, I love you, I love you, I do. You can say that again. Talk about the things that we do, and all that we hope and long for. Talk about my favorite you, and when you're through, just tell me 10 times more. Oh, darling, say that again.
Remember
the bit about remembering. Darling, say that again. The bit about love never ending. You can shout it to all the world. Say we've found a heaven. I love you. I love you. I love you. I do. You can say that again. Remembering. Darling, say that again. The bit about love never ending. You can shout it to all the world. Say we've found a heaven. I love you. I love you. I love you. I do. You can say that again.
That was Michael Cox and Say That Again. Next, we have The Honeycombs and Have I the Right? And I have to say, he really did seem to pull out all the stops on this production.
Yeah, well, his third and final number one. And of course, the stomping on the choruses there was achieved by microphones clipped onto the stairs, and members of the band were ordered to jump up and down in time for the music to get that thudding sound. And then Joe obviously sped it up, as he did on a lot of recordings. And by doing that, he always got that bit more commercial sound, a bit more edgy sound. And yeah, it was a big hit. It was quite a big hit in Europe. In fact, the band were quite more popular abroad than they were here. They didn't really follow up that success, but in sort of countries like Sweden and Japan, they were huge.
Yeah, rightly so. I mean, it is just, it's one of my favourite tracks anyhow.
Have I the right to hold you? You know I've always told you that we must never, ever part. Oh, have I the right to kiss you? Shivers running down my spine. Yeah.
That was The Honeycombs and Have I the Right. Next, we have Davey or Dave K, A Fool Such As I. Should I be inferring a little bit of Elvis influence on this one, Craig?
Well, yeah, I mean, probably the main reason I've chosen this one, Jason, is because Dave actually only lives about 15 minutes down the road from me. We do go for a drink fairly regularly, and he doesn't tend to get his records played very often, so I thought it'd be nice just to get Dave in on the show. Yeah, he did two singles with Joe. Dave told me on this one that Joe was very particular on the drum sound. If you listen to it, it's a different beat to the Elvis Presley version. And Joe would walk into the studio and say, no, I want this cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha sound on the drum. That's how Joe would, because he wasn't a musician, he would have to come into the studio and say, I want it to sound like this, or it to sound like that. And, of course, on this record as well, we've got Ritchie Blackmore on lead guitar, who, of course, later went on to form Deep Purple and Rainbow.
Yeah, and there's quite a heavy bass line on it, actually, as well.
There is, yeah. I mean, Joe was one of the first people as well to record the bass guitar by directly injecting, so not going through an amplifier, going straight into DI box into the desk, which again was unheard of, but that's Joe all over. There's so many things which we now take for granted. For example, putting a microphone inside the bass drum sounds, you know, simple. It's the practice today, but back in the early 60s, it wasn't done. You listen to those records at the time, you can't hear the bass drum. Joe would stick the microphone in there, he'd cram it full of blankets, and you'd get that fuddy bass drum sound, which didn't come until many, many years after. Typical Joe getting in there first, you know?
Yeah, great choice. Dave K, A Fool Such As I, an A-side on Decca from 1964.
Pardon me if I'm sentimental when we say goodbye. Don't be angry with me, should I cry. When you're gone, yet I'll dream a little, dream as years go by. Now and then, as a fool such as I. Now and then, as a fool such as I am, over you, you taught me how to love, and now you say that we are through. I'm a fool, but I love you, dear, until the day I die. Now and then, as a fool such as I. I am over you. You taught me how to love, and now you say that we are through. I'm a fool, but I love you, dear, until day I die. Now and then, as a fool such as I.
Dave K, A Fool Such As I. Next, we have another Joe Meat track, Blue Rondos and Little Baby. It's probably one of my favourite tracks ever made. Was it actually a hit, Craig?
It wasn't, but I can't for the life of me figure out why not. It's just one of those great singles that got away. I think it was probably a shock to the band, Joe, and everybody at the time that it wasn't a hit. Again, I mean, the singer couldn't believe it. When he heard the playback, he sounded a lot like Roy Orbison, you'll notice, on this record. The record was perfectly in keeping with the times. Fantastic production. It's got that atmosphere on there yet again. Oh, it just was never a hit. I mean, you think of some of the stuff that was out at the time. dreadful, you know, and that going to the top 10, and then you've got such cracking records like this, and didn't enter the charts at all. It just doesn't make sense.
Well, let's, in a very, very small way, write that wrong and play it yet again. The Blue Rondos and Little Baby. And Little Baby. Next, we have a figure who features prominently in Joe Meek's life, and that's Hines and his track Digging My Potatoes. Why did you pick this particular Hines track amongst the many that he did with Joe?
Yeah, a bit of a strange title, this one. It is an arrangement of a traditional song. The thing is that Hines did not have a great singing voice. He had to have a lot of training before he could get a record out there. And of course, he did have a number five hit in 63 with Just Like Eddie, another Jeff Goddard's song tribute to Eddie Cochran. But when he changed labels to Columbia in 1964, he made several really good records, which tend to get forgotten about, unfortunately. And he did have a lot of good musicians behind him as well, Hines. You know, Ritchie Blackmore's on many of Hines's recordings and various other really of-the-day musicians who did go on to bigger and better things as well. But this one, again, I just think it's a really well-balanced production, great guitar solo in there. Just think it's a really good single from Hines. And you know, again, it was really in keeping with the times and should have, you know, had a lot more success than what it did.
Absolutely. So let's hear Hines and the Wild Boys, Digging My Potatoes.
Time. feeling can't get you from my mind.
And Digging My Potatoes, next to The Syndicates, On the Horizon. I wasn't aware of this track, but really, thanks for telling me it existed. I didn't realise that this was the A-side to Crawdaddy Simone.
Yeah, On the Horizon does get overlooked. It's a sublime production, this one. I was saying, you'll hear Joe's famous piano on this one as well. Now, what he did with this upright piano was stick drawing pins through the hammers of the piano to get this really jangly pub piano sound, and you can hear it to really good effect on this record. Such a rare record, as you'll probably know, it usually fetches between £750 and £1,000 whenever it shows up. And Crawdaddy Simone, if listeners haven't heard it, I've listened to it on YouTube. It's one of those really out there, over the top, distorted, manic productions that Joe just did so well. And then you've got this on the Horizon on the A side, which is a complete contrast to that.
And written by Lieber and Stoller. The Syndicates and On the Horizon from 1965, also on Columbia.
The sky on the horizon, I saw a ship come sailing by. Was this the ship that I often dreamed of? A ship made of gold, where the gold sailed above. Was this the ship of dreams.
Next we have, and I didn't realise that Joe Meek produced Tom Jones, but he certainly did, for Lonely Joe. Was that actually released as a single over here?
It was. Now, Tom Jones recorded for Joe back in 1963, so before he'd hit the big time, when he was Tommy Scott and the Senators then. And the tracks didn't get released at the time. Obviously, Tom Jones moved on, started to have hits. So, as I suppose anyone would do, Joe decided to get in on the act and get Tom Jones's record released, much to Tom's annoyance, as he'd basically written the recordings off and slated them as inferior. I think he even wrote into the press and urged people not to buy them. I mean, the thing is, Joe recorded a lot of people before they were famous. I mean, we're talking people like Mark Bolan, David Bowie, Rod Stewart, Tom Jones, Status Quo, and there's more. We're still discovering people that Joe actually recorded before anyone. And a lot of session musicians, as they went on to do their own thing later on. Jimmy Page, Richie Blackmore, we've already talked about. But yeah, I mean, if you listen to Lonely Joe, not written by Joe, not about Joe, although if you listen to the words and you know a bit about Joe, the words do kind of fit in with his life. But listening to this, I think you'll agree that by no means is the record inferior to anything Tom's done whatsoever.
Absolutely. It's a good record. Tom Jones and Lonely Joe.
Town I know goes rolling by. They can't see me up here, it's much too high. I'm high up on a hill that overlooks the town, and you I can climb. Oh yeah, I can climb, and she will never know I'm a sad somewhere. A girl I know has someone new. She said goodbye to me. What could I do? I said I wish you well, pretending it was easy too. But now I can cry. Oh yeah, I can cry, and she will never know. Among the clouds, I dream my dream. How small and silent now the town does seem. Until once more I'll go back down to face the town and you. But then I won't cry. Oh no, I'd rather die than let somebody know that I'm a sad and
you've been listening to Tom Jones and Lonely Joe, next to another great record that I wasn't aware of from Joe Meek. And again, thank you for basically suggesting it. Glenda Collins, Something I've Got to Tell You. This is another excellent track.
Again, it's one of those I can't understand why it wasn't a hit at the time. Joe didn't record that many girl singers, but the most prolific one was Glenda Collins, who I think did 8 singles with Joe. This one is one of those really standout tracks, a really good, strong song, fantastic arrangement on there, beautiful, crisp production. perfectly in keeping with the times, 1966. Oh, this didn't get in the top 40. I mean, Glenda never had that big hit. I mean, she got a fantastic voice, some cracking records. And again, you know, I mean, there was a lot of talk about, you know, people out to get Joe, really. You have to remember that a lot of these companies were envious of Joe. They obviously had these big studio setups and lots of money, and Joe had his front room above a leather goods shop with little money, and, you know, he was turning out these number one hits, and people couldn't quite believe it. We've not really talked about the setup of the studio, but anyone that ever went up there said it was just a mess, you know, the cables and tape and second-hand gear and things, bare wires twisted together. It was probably pretty much a death trap in the control room. So the fact that he pulled out all these hits and fantastic sounds, I mean, it's just such a great story.
And this is something that everybody needs to listen to. Glenda Collins, Something I've Got to Tell You, released on Pi again in 1966.
There's something I've got to tell you, baby.
Was Glenda Collins and Something I've Got to Tell You. Next, another highlight, really, of Joe Meek's fabulous career. The Crying Shames, Please Stay. I understand it was destined to be Joe's final hit before he committed suicide. So it's got an added significance.
Yeah, it was his last, it was his last biggest chart success. His last entry to the charts, 1966. Quite an unusual mix, if you listen to it. The vocal presence on it when Charlie's voice come in is just incredible. It's sort of, if you've got it turned up, it'll take you back quite a bit. I think it got to about number 26 in the charts. I think it hit number one in Scotland. The Crying Shames were a cracking group, and some of them were actually, you know, recently reformed and back on the road. And they had a follow-up single called Nobody Wave Goodbye, which was in the same vein, and that did absolutely nothing at all. Again, what do we put it down to? Distribution, as you say, publicity, people not wanting Joe to be a success. I don't know. If you've not heard this before, it's a cracking record.
The 5th of April, would that have been Joe's 84th birthday?
Joe, yes, yeah, it's coming up to the anniversary of his birthday, and obviously it's not long the anniversary since his death in 1967, which was under very mysterious circumstances as well, that's never been really fully explained.
Was it around the issue about the royalties for Telstar? And
it's strange because I have spoken to artists who knew Joe at the time, and they couldn't see this depression or this suicide coming. It came such a shock to people, but I don't know. I think there was a lot of things added to it. Of course, he never received a penny in composer royalties for Telstar. His hits had dried up, unfortunately. He was under a lot of stress, a lot of pressure. He'd been blackmailed for various reasons, been found beaten up in his car before, been taking a lot of tablet stuff to keep him working through the night. I think it was just a really unhealthy cocktail on one man's mind, really. And I think, you know, over the course of a couple of days, this is just me from what I've been told and what I've read, I think he just had a massive breakdown over the course of a couple of days, and that's how it ended. Spookily enough, on the anniversary of his idol Buddy Holly, died in 1959 on the same day.
And finishing on a poignant note with the Crying Shames and Police Day, Craig, thank you very much for choosing the tracks today. Before we go, what's next for the Joe Meek Society, and how can people get involved with, you know, the work that you're doing?
Well, the next thing we've got coming up is our annual general meeting, which we're holding in Holloway, just down the road from Joe's studio, at a bar called The Metro. That's in May the 18th. And we have a meeting, and then we've got some of Joe's artists playing acoustic performances for us. If people want to learn more or join the society, they can drop onto our website. That's www.joemeeksociety.org. You search Joe Meek Society on Facebook, and we're also on Twitter at Joe Meek Society.
Yeah, so thank you very much, everybody. And let's hear the Crying Shames. And please stay until next time. Take care.
If I got on my knees and I pleaded with you not to go but to stay in my arms, would you walk out the door like you did once before? This friend, please stay, don't go. If I call out your name like a prayer, would you leave me alone in that fear, knowing I need you so? You still turn and go this time. Be different. Please stay. Don't go. Please stay. I love you before I even. And I wanted to give you my heart, but now you came back after leaving me one time. Oh, I knew, oh, how I knew that the heartache would start. If I call out your name like a song which was written for you, you alone, would you still hurt my pride, baby, till I cry? This time be different. Please stay, don't go. feel.